Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This week, the race for digital primacy in Africa. Global technology firms from the US and China see a wide range of opportunities in Africa's digital future. But who will ultimately drive the continent's so-called digital coming of age? And what are the economic and political implications for African countries and their citizens? We'll also have a sit-down interview with the man who wants to be the next president of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Martin Fayulu tells us why he has been touring North America and why he wants all eyes on the 2023 election in the DRC. Straight Talk Africa starts now. Hello there and welcome. I'm Haiti Adams. You've probably heard it said before that Africa is on the brink of a digital transformation, a sort of tech revolution that is likely to reduce poverty, improve access to education, jobs and social services, and boost growth and development in the region. Today, six of the world's 10 fastest growing economies are in Africa, and global technology firms see significant commercial potential in expanding internet connectivity and digital infrastructure in the region. But who is shaping the digital landscape across Africa? Kenya, for example, is a leader in digital innovation on the continent. But the East African nation has also become a battlefield for tech giants, primarily from the US and China, all vying for digital dominance there. Juma Majanga reports for us from Nairobi.
The digital revolution is sweeping across the globe, and Africa has not been left behind. With the world's youngest population and the lowest broadband connectivity at only 22% according to World Bank data, Africa presents the biggest digital frontier.
Technology has been used to ensure that what human beings cannot do better can be enhanced through technology. And it has really facilitated communication. It has made it possible for us to do the impossibles in terms of how we engage with our fellow human beings, with the machines, and the environments as a whole.
Kenya is known for groundbreaking digital innovations like the M-Pesa, a digital mobile phone money transfer technology. But the country continues to rely on technology imports from countries like China and the US. In 2021, Kenya imported $1.19 billion worth electrical and electric equipment, according to the UN Comrade database.
Behind technology, America is very, very key, but China is shadowing them because of the robustness and the availability and how they engage us and the aspect of helping us own some of these products.
I think the technological war between China and US is really hurting African states in the sense that we are being told to choose one from the other. And you see from the African continent or from the African perspective is that we go for what is accessible and then what is cheap.
The enrollment of the fifth generation network in Africa has been hampered by the rivalry between the US and China.
If you look at Google, among others, and in terms of the growth of the generation network, first generation, second, third, three, four, fifth, among others, these are American ideas. And it is true that because of the war between Huawei and America, it has not been rolled effectively even here in Africa.
Kenyans have varied opinions on the origin of the technologies they use.
So I really have to care where my internet is coming from, because first of all, I need to value my security. I also have to value the cost and even the capability, or I can say the quality of the internet that we're getting.
Honestly, I don't care where my internet or the technology thing comes from, because there are people who are in charge of it. The same way when you come to a restaurant, you don't care how the food was prepared. You just eat, say it's delicious and walk. That's the same way with me. I use it, it was perfect, it didn't hang, and I walk away.
For tech entrepreneurs like Kevin Omondi, the growth of their tech ventures is what concerns them most.
As a young startup that we are actually, we lack the funds, And then the awareness whereby if an application has been developed, now what we need is the funds for us to be able to make this market, roll out these markets widely so that it's also accepted. And then apart from that is the education that we also need, because you find that we don't have the good education systems compared to the Western countries like maybe China or US.
The interruptions of the global supply chains by COVID-19 and Russia's war on Ukraine has laid bare the risk of relying on imports. And as developed countries scramble for digital frontier in Africa, experts say Africans should strive to build and develop their own technologies. Juma Majanga, VOA Africa News Center, Nairobi.
So why are companies from countries outside of Africa vying for digital supremacy in Africa? And what does this battle mean for you and your freedoms and the technology you use? Also, what is at stake for your country's economic and political future? Well, joining me now to discuss this is Dennis Matanda. He's a chief executive at Morgenthau Sterling, a trade and investment firm here in Washington, D.C. And joining us from our studio in New York is Abubakar Idris. He reports on technology and business for Rest of World. Gentlemen, a warm welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Dennis, I'm going to start off with you here. What does digital primacy in Africa entail? I mean, give us an idea of what it looks like.
I think we need to step back and ask a question. Are digital firms really making a beeline for Africa, or is there just an opportunity to take advantage of in Africa? But let's look at it from this perspective. There are over 700 million people in China right now that still need to be satisfied. Every single day that goes by, there are adoptive and adaptive people in China who are willing to take advantage of the technology. And lastly, if you look at what they call the 14-5-year plan that the Chinese government actually implemented, it is not necessarily for other people. It is for the Chinese, because that is the strength of the Chinese market. The Chinese market is strong because it has some of the world's most adaptable people. It's actually a reflection that China is a developing country, albeit being a very rapidly developing country.
So for China to have primacy in Africa, that's for China's benefit.
Yes, that's absolutely for China's benefit. But I think that I will now come back and answer your question properly, which is, why are they coming to Africa? It's because Africa has a young population, and Africa still is a frontier of the next development. Until Africa has enough road networks, and I think that my colleague Idris wrote a brilliant, brilliant paper on road networks and the rail networks in Nigeria between 1960 or something. If you look at it from that perspective, there's a direct relationship to digital supremacy in Africa.
Well, clearly, Abubakar, Dennis did his homework on you, but can you help us understand China's digital silk road? How vast is it? How sophisticated is it? Because as I understand it, it's meant to provide aid, political support, and sort of other types of assistance to recipient states. But what does it entail?
Right. I mean, China has been building, developing its digital Silk Road for a long time. And on the African continent, it has basically entailed supporting Chinese-owned companies that are operating on the continent, helping them with not just resources to grow, but also partnerships with the government and with businesses and governments in this region. And so there's been a lot of, conversations and partnership between Chinese-owned businesses and the African governments and businesses on the African continent too. And they've done this in different ways over the last few years. But at the same time that, all this is happening, I think what is also critical is to remember that Chinese businesses on the African continent, Chinese tech businesses on the African continent, are still relatively small compared to the U.S. and European behemoths that have massive footprints in this region. So for China's own businesses, the plan is to improve their footprint in this region, and it has done so and is still doing so with partnership with governments.
Dennis, this is your wheelhouse. What is the impact, the larger impact on issues like infrastructure, national security, trade, when you have this kind of race for digital supremacy? How does it expand into these other sectors and areas?
In very simple terms, for me, it basically says or suggests that the war for digital supremacy in Africa is going to be won by the United States. And now let me make it from this perspective. If you go to an African country and look at what China provides. To the government, China is going to provide some of its very advanced artificial intelligence on facial recognition, on blocking certain elements of social media. And so the governments will import this sort of technology. Go at it from the other side. What does the United States export to African countries? It's probably going to be Facebook, TikTok, Google, whatever it is, that social media technology. And if you listen to the report that you had, Huawei has been having major challenges with its 5G because of a very simple agreement by the United States or the United States private sector saying we will not do anything with a particular brand. But then there's another very big difference. There is a huge difference between the people who go do business in Africa from China and those from the United States. Now, there is Baidu, Alibaba, and Tencent from China. It's called the BAT. They are private sector entities going ahead to do work. But behind those entities is government money from China.
Correct.
The United States, all these global behemoths, how much of a percentage does the U.S. government have as shares? Almost 0%. In fact, 0%. Perhaps you will find pension funds that have put their money into these entities because they are publicly traded entities, but there is no real connection. So from that perspective, there is a chance that the Chinese will go much further, but is that sustainable?
Right.
And that is the point.
So it's this connection
to
Beijing at the end of the day, not necessarily a connection to Washington.
Absolutely.
On the other hand. We're going to take a short break quickly. I want you both to stay with me. We'll continue our discussion here on the other side of the break. Straight Talk Africa. We'll be back in a moment.
Bring the continent every day from east to west, north to south. That's VOA Africa 54. We bring you the latest news and development from Africa. Politics, health, tech, and everything in between. We're on it. Our network of reporters and analysts are on hand to add perspective to all our reports. Join me, Esther Githui-Ewart, Monday through Friday, right here on VOA's Africa 54.
Well, you're with Straight Talk Africa. Welcome back. And we're discussing the race for digital primacy in Africa. I'm with Dennis Matanda here, a trade and investment expert. He's a chief executive at Morgenthau Sterling, and Abubakar Idris, a business and technology journalist who writes for Rest of World. Abubakar, I want to come to you. We've been talking about sort of back-end battles here, but then there's also the front end of things. Does whoever have digital dominance at any particular time also have the ability to really interfere in a country's political and economic affairs?
Right. I think the conversation about the front end of technology is basically one of the most interesting topics for me right now, because when you think about the front end, it's not just how a phone looks like. It's not just how the apps are arranged. It's not just also what the interface of the app looks like. It's a bunch of other things. It's all the way down to how the algorithm suggests content for you. It's all the way down to, you know, what it's picking up about your interest, how you're scrolling on the phone, how you're scrolling on the screen. All those things play key roles in how technology is developed, in how people are thinking on the back end about how to make stuff better for the African consumer and for consumers as a whole. And so when you think about it from that perspective, the front end itself is a huge chunk of the of what drives technology in today's world. And so it's something that people are paying attention to. It's basically also, you know, how people are thinking about how to improve and basically, what's it called, to redevelop how Africans are basically using technology and, you know, interfacing with all this innovation in this part of the world.
Dennis, China, for example, has been criticized for censoring media, for censoring free speech and monitoring and restricting social media. Is it providing governments on the continent with sort of high-tech censorship tools that could be abused by repressive regimes?
Mm-hmm. So I want to answer it from two perspectives. Let me talk about it first. For people that don't speak English or French or Luganda or Swahili, The Chinese need to receive a lot of praise. They speak Mandarin, Cantonese, and they have been able to make such inroads into the African Absolutely. Continent. So let's talk about it from that perspective. That is huge. My friend Paul Nantulia, I've known Paul ever since maybe 1988. We shared a dormitory, and he is one of the foremost experts on this. And he has written a brilliant number of papers on what they call the Guangxi system that the Chinese deploy in Africa. They basically do not just develop a front-facing tool. So like Idris was talking about, it's not just about the technology on the front. There are relationships that are in the back of the systems. And if you look at every single level, there is a national security aspect, there is a social economic aspect, there is a political aspect, and then related to that, there is a profit and profitability aspect. This is not conspiracy theory. I think that Idris captured it very well by saying we cannot just look at it from its front dimension. It is a multidimensional aspect. So digital supremacy is actually supremacy for livelihoods.
And is this exactly what we do not want, is to be more coupled with a foreign power? We always talk about how neocolonialism, we don't want to see colonialism ever again. We need to decolonize. But if your country has your cloud computing is connected, your digital infrastructure is connected and controlled and owned by a foreign power, doesn't that fly in the face of what African countries want in terms of independence?
What do African countries want? African countries want a fully functional continent. If you look at the African Union's Agenda 2063, the Africa we want, there is a digital component. There is an aspect of relating with Western. So if you go back to the non-aligned movement of the 1960s, 50s, it's not about who can we decouple from or who do we. There is no going it your way anymore. In fact, if you look at how China has been very successful, go back to 1978. What China did was imitate every single thing. Go look at the Chinese technology, the Chinese infrastructure. From 1949, when it got its basic independence, it has been imitating. It imitated the Russians, it imitated other people. But if you come at it from that perspective and saying we have to decouple, the reality is Africa needs to be part of the global community. And one of the reasons why Africa still attracts less than 5% of foreign direct investment is simply because it is not as deeply integrated into the global system. The point is that if you look at global supply chains and distribution networks, they are dependent on technology, Western technology. If you want to look at something that I'm very passionate about, it is tariff rate quotas or sanitary and phytosanitary standards. A country like Namibia has enough beef to export to the United States, but if it doesn't fit the technology required to get to the United States, its beef is a colossal waste of time to the Americans.
I see that point. Abubakar, to that point Dennis just made, what are African countries doing or what should they be doing to develop their own technologies so that we can be part of the global, you know, part of the global community, but at the same time be less reliant on other countries outside of the continent? We have about a minute and a half for you.
Right. I think the first thing is a lot of African countries recognize that they need to be pragmatic as they deal with this whole conversation about digital sovereignty between especially with the escalating tension between the U.S. and China. And so they're very, very pragmatic about how they go about it, what exactly they want to pursue, what kind of partnership they want to support. And that being said, many of them also recognize that they need to build and develop the local tech ecosystem. And so they've been developing something called the Startup Act in places like Senegal, in places like Nigeria. There have been strong push by the governments in these places to introduce things that are called the Startup Act, which is basically a way to kickstart development of technology businesses in this part of the world. And so to an extent, they've been fairly effective in terms of how they've introduced this this new government legislature. But to be seen, this new act hasn't really propelled much technology innovation. But at the same time, the governments have also been trying to be open in terms of enabling introduction of investment, foreign direct investment into tech startups in these countries. And so we've seen the growth in venture capital to this market by virtue of how the governments in these places have stood back and also supported the businesses that have emerged in their various markets. And so places like Nigeria, Ghana, Kenya, South Africa have seen a boost in venture capital over the last few years.
Well, gentlemen, this has been a fascinating conversation. I'll have you both back on the show again soon. Dennis Mutanda, Chief Executive at Morgenthau Sterling, and Abubakar Idris, a business and technology journalist. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining me. I do thank you for your time. Well, after a short break, our newsmaker interview with Martin Fayulu, who says he wants to be the next president of the Democratic Republic of Congo. He's been down that road before. He'll tell us why the 2023 vote will be a turning point for the DRC. That interview is next.
Medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Linoch Mudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
Welcome back. Congolese opposition leader Martin Fayulu is on a tour of North America, and he is calling on the international community to keep an eye on the 2023 election in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Fayulu is hoping for a rematch with current President Felix Tshisekedi in his bid for the nation's highest office. However, the election process seems to be on Fayulu's mind. He spoke to VOA's Jackson Mbunganye.
I remember the last time I spoke to you around 2018, right after the elections. Spoke during the elections and then after the elections. What do you believe happened during the elections? Why are you not president?
I'm not president because Mr. Kabila didn't want me to be the president. Mr. Kabila wanted to hold the power, what he did, and he appointed someone who could agree totally with him, and that's happened.
So you did not have the opportunity to lead the Congolese, to be president, but you've been very active in the country's politics. What have you been working on? What are you doing these days?
We have to prepare ourselves for the next election. I'm teaching, I'm educating Congolese, telling them that all issues we are having in the Congo, poverty, insecurity, all those issues are due to lack of legitimacy. We don't have institutions and the leaders who were, you know, put in place by the Congolese people.
Elections are going to take place in the DRC. Are you planning on running again? And if you do, what are you doing to make sure that what happened in 2018 doesn't happen again in 2023?
Yes, I'm planning to run because Congolese want to see me there. And if they tell me that you have to stop, okay, I will listen to them. I'm trying to, I will run, and what I'm doing since day one, after the fourth result, I ask everybody that we have to go and change things in the Congo and have reforms. And I propose on May 10th, 2019, you know, a solution, you know, how to get out of that the crisis. What I proposed is every stakeholders, all of us, we have to sit down together and agree on some institutional reforms, the reforms of the Electoral Commission, the reforms of electoral law, and some others. And we have tried, we have made proposal on all those reforms. And today, what we continue to do is to tell people that tomorrow, please pay attention. Your votes should count. And after voting, you have to stay in the poll station and wait until they issue the result. Mm. If the result is not correct, you have to demonstrate. And nobody will come again and steal your vote.
So you're saying, Congolese, take ownership of your process and your elections to make sure that whoever you elected is actually the person in the seat of power. What is your expectation from the international community?
Yes, I'm telling Congolese, yes, do that. But I'm telling also the international community, you have to do your part. Like the U.S. here, the USA has pledged $23.5 million for the next election, this which is good. But by doing so, the USA has engaged his responsibility, you know, is engaged, you know, his reputation. And that means they have not to wait until they give the result. They have to follow, to scrutinize the electoral process. Mm-hmm. And if there is something wrong, if something is derailing, if someone wants to derail the process, the electoral process, I think the USA and the other member of international community, they have to come and put sanction, take sanction to those guys.
Mr. Fayulu, 2023 is coming. You are likely, I mean, you said you're going to run. If you win, what are some of the top priority areas for your country that is coming out of this pandemic?
My priority is, first of all, to build the fundamentals. Those fundamentals are prerequisites for Congo. This is a country which respects the law, okay, state of law. And secondly, the country with its integrity, total integrity. Congo should remain one. Thirdly, a national cohesion. All of us, we should be one, have a cohesion, working together for the prosperity of Congolese and our country. And the last one, the fourth, is the integrity in governing the country, what some call good governance. I call it integrity governance, okay? If we have all these four prerequisites, then we go to some priority, which are education, which are agriculture, because we have to feed our people, which are infrastructure, okay, and electricity, water, and so on. Mm. But the first thing is those prerequisites.
Well, the DRC's Martin Fayulu there speaking to my colleague Jackson Mvunganye. And that is where we leave it for this week. Thank you so much to my guests and all our reporting teams who contributed to this week's show, and to our affiliate stations airing Straight Talk Africa across the continent. From our team here in Washington, thank you for joining us on television, radio, and online. We appreciate you always watching and always listening. And I'll see you next time. Do take good care. Goodbye.